Everyone, this is Peter Grandich. I want to remind you this is not to be considered investment advice. You should always speak to a licensed financial advisor before making any investment decision and to read our disclosures. This communication is accessible to all listeners. However, it is primarily directed towards clients of an alternative traditional financial planning group, which I've been professionally affiliated with for over 25 years. Clients are encouraged to reach out to us directly. Communication is not limited to social media channels. Our team is available through other means for client support. For non-clients, please note that I'm unable to respond to questions regarding investment matters. Responses to such topics may be provided at my discretion and often in connection with charitable donations to organizations I support. So this is a look back of the first quarter and entering 2026, I held the most bearish outlook of my entire 42-year financial career. The foundation principles I established remain fully applicable and are even more essential given the recent economic, social, and political developments both domestically and internationally. Before moving forward, it's important to review these principles. My guiding standard, which has been central for decades, is a less is more attitude. A significant majority, about 70 to 80% of families, are living lifestyles at least one level above their actual financial status. This tendency is largely influenced by the misleading notion preserved by Wall Street and Madison Avenue that greater wealth and material possessions equate to greater happiness. The reality is many individuals are exhausting themselves in a relentless pursuit that is unnecessary for genuine peace and happiness. While it is true that some people could afford larger homes, more luxurious cars, and additionally worldly goods, it's crucial to consider the real cost. Most families become burdened by debt as they chase this illusion, ultimately facing harsh consequences and financial difficulties. I consistently speak out against debt, which remains the most problematic four-letter word in my investment philosophy. For 2026, and I suspect multiple years afterwards, my stance includes the belief that capital preservation, not capital appreciation, must now be the driving force. It will end up not how much one makes, but doesn't lose, that will separate the winners versus the losers. Being a live chicken versus a dead duck is a good description of my attitude towards investing. As we begin the second quarter, I find many more reasons to stay in my foxhole and absolutely nothing to suggest otherwise. I wrote about my biggest bearish factors both in my New Year commentary and a blog post entitled My 10 Most Bearish Factors, both of which are below in this blog post. I number them in terms of levels of concern, but quite frankly, the top four could all be number one. Let me briefly go over them here, but greatly encourage you to follow my X page where I discuss them in much greater detail. Additionally, the others are significant on their own and could collectively be the top issue as well. The number one remains debt. Although some dismiss ongoing discussions of this bearish factor as alarmist, it remains the most significant issue in the market. We're adding trillions to our national debt faster than Grant took Richmond. Paying just the interest by 2035 has garnered international attention and one of the several reasons I believe foreigners continue to be net sellers of treasuries. It took 26 years for the debt to go from $1 trillion to $10 trillion. It took just about 12 years to go from $10 trillion to $20 trillion, and now it's just about 6 years to go from $20 trillion to the $40 trillion we're certainly going to hit later this year. But it's also alarming now on state and local levels. 25 states don't have enough money to fully cover their financial obligations, despite 49 of them having balanced budget requirements. Among the worst performing states are California, Illinois, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and my home state, New Jersey. Consumer debt nears $19 trillion, while more than 111 million Americans have credit card balances they can't pay off. Two-thirds of Americans work paycheck to paycheck, and most lack $1,000 for emergencies. In 2025, it was believed that 44% of hourly employees relied on debt or on-demand payment options to cover essential expenditures like groceries, utilities, and transportation. The distribution of wealth grows more concerning as the top 1% of U.S. earners now have more wealth than the entire middle class. Last but certainly not least, corporate debt, as well as private credit and equity, are critical issues. When Trump announced late last summer the wish to see private equity and credit markets open to the public for investing, I pounded the table for anyone invested in those markets to get out immediately. I stated back then if they want public money in, they can't be in good shape and need a bailout. Sure enough, private credit and equity was one of my 10 most bearish factors and is one of the several crises now underway here in America. And when you throw in the following fact, it's why I have also urged avoidance of all corporate bonds besides Treasury's T-bills. Triple B debt, the lowest rung of investment grade and just one level above junk, has grown almost five times its 2009 size and makes up over 50% of all U.S. investment grade market. With nearly $4 trillion currently in that category, both it and private credit are serious concerns, in my view, and should be avoided. Investors are hedging against corporate defaults at record pace. Trading volume in the world's largest credit default swap, CDX, indexes surged 69% in the first quarter of 2026 to $4.5 trillion, the highest on record. Now, number two is political division, both here and abroad. This factor has seen significant negative enhancement in just the last 3 months. It's also the most sensitive of all my 10 factors, and generates the most comments, especially from non-clients. But to be fair, number four, to be discussed shortly, is almost tied with it in that regard. Perhaps what leads to so many responses is the fact that I'm neither a member of MAGA or suffer from TDS, despite what some of the hate mail thinks otherwise. I voted for Trump 3 times. In early 2025, I firmly opposed one major action of his, predicting 2 very significant negative outcomes that have now become apparent to those who increasingly acknowledge them. I remarked that choosing a forceful approach in a trade war instead of seeking compromise, or what I like to say, he took a big stick in instead of an olive branch, could severely impact us both economically and politically on the international stage. Whether the facts that caused him to do so were correct or not, the manner he chose to conduct himself in was the problem, I noted, and it led us now to becoming weaker, not stronger, as he and his supporters claimed at the time. While hardcore MAGA supporters will go down with the ship, while Trump haters just hate even more, if that's possible, what is critical now is those who did side with him before, but now have clearly changed course, or may just sit out the next election, what actually plays into what the opposition is hoping for. I also stated through 2025, much of his rhetoric played a key part in keeping the United States stock market up, despite several factors that were chipping away at its foundation. That ability of his is all but gone, and one of the several reasons why I remain so bearish for 2026 and beyond. It's hard for me to see how the Middle East war now turns out favorably for Trump and adds to the political divide, because I feel many will now look at all he supposedly failed to deliver on versus a couple things he did fix, like the border crisis. The November election looks more favorable for the opposition now, and I truly, truly don't want to think what it'll be like if the Democrats regain control of at least the House. It will be an absolute net negative for the financial world, in my opinion. Now, number three is AI. While Wall Street knocked each other over, urging ownership of these companies and lending a boatload of money without any real thoughts to the downside to their actions, the negatives have become so alarming now that it would not be out of line to make it my number one negative factor. Anthropic, one of the most powerful AI labs alive, has officially predicted that AGI by early 2027. The CEOs of OpenAI, Google, DeepMind, and Anthropic have all placed that same bet. AGI means a machine that can do intellectual tasks a human can do, and now here is where it gets worse. Dr. Jan Palisky, a renowned AI expert, proposed what is commonly called the drop-in employee concept, a system costing just $20 per month or even free, capable of performing the task of a full-time worker. Physical labor is not far behind. Humanoid robots are approximately 5 years away from doing what your hands now do for a living. So do the math. Digital jobs automate the moment AGI hits, and physical jobs automate within 5 years after that. To me, the only jobs left are the ones for personal reasons we're going to still want a human. Number four, Islamic takeover. When I started as a stockbroker back in March of 1984, my boss sat me down the very first week and said not to discuss three things with potential clients if I want to be successful: politics, religion, and other men's wives. I have long ago greatly violated the first two, so much so of late regarding my belief that an Islamic takeover is real and the end of Western civilization as we know have been blessed to know it is before us. I have received actual death threats because of my outspokenness. In the financial service industry, most people only say what sells. I prefer to speak my mind honestly, and I have no intention of changing now. What's unique for Americans is the fact they have a preview of what's coming for them by simply looking at what happened in other countries like the United Kingdom, France, Ireland, and even Canada have now gone through. Ask people from those countries how their perception from 10 years ago compares to what actually happened. It would closely resemble the statements currently made by many Americans, even among those who are open to discussing the subject. While number four has its sights on number one, this is genuinely a matter of life or death based on the facts. Don't look any less at the other six bearish factors of mine because I don't. I'm worried about these issues surrounding retirement and aging especially. Not only will most Americans not get to live out this man-made retirement myth, but now we're witnessing government usage of suicide to end life for those they deem too far gone. Only Almighty God decides that, and in a weakening economic and spiritual society, I'm afraid this is a growth weapon for government and the evil spirits they embrace. Finally, a food crisis continues to worsen here and elsewhere. My wife and I have made our number one goal to do what we can in this area. Fraud and corruption, both within and outside the government, has become so common that many people feel powerless to change it, and they are no longer easily shocked by what they hear. I couldn't end this discussion without discussing my single largest personal action in this first quarter that just passed, especially since I know the single largest amount of non-client following is because of my views and actions that are in the metals and mining. Following my strongest 1 and 5 year personal performance across my 42-year career, I have maintained this momentum through this first quarter. However, my experience has taught me that investing, particularly when engaging in speculation, which is really gambling, does not follow a single predictable path. Believing gold and silver had gone completely parabolic, and all good things come to an end when we hit these formations, I sold all metals and mining holdings but one stock and felt gold could fall back to 4,400 and silver into the 60s. Sure enough, just days later, the most violent fall I can recall being an active watcher of occurred, and gold went through 4,400 and barely held above 4,000. Silver dropped to just above 60, prompting those who loudly predicted a meteoric rise to suffer their usual amnesia. At a major low in the market, I chose to invest solely in mining shares and junior stocks, avoiding physical metals this time around. My interest has always been in capital gains, not negative scenarios. Can't even read my own handwriting. While I anticipate gold and silver will hit new peaks, metals equities currently provide superior leverage. During the peak of a parabolic rise, selling physical gold and silver was not only challenging, but saw bids 25% or below spot because they couldn't get the sale of those metals. In contrast, selling the paper gold holdings like GLD and SLV allowed sellers to receive virtual spot prices. That is a negative that the physical bullion believers didn't want to speak about beforehand. In conclusion, my recommended allocation persists. Individuals with mostly gray or less hair should adopt a more conservative approach. Broad equity ownership is not advisable in my eyes, except if they involve metals and mining sectors. Congratulations to those clients who incorporated equity index annuities, RILERs, and ETFs designed to replicate their performance. You can feel confident in your financial strategy. If you haven't used them yet for equity positions, you're strongly urged to do so. Please keep in mind that my concerns are not for the next trading day, week, or month, but my positioning is consideration for several years out. Let me now close by telling a story about what it was like back in the dinosaur days of the early 1980s. At that time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average had just spent the last 13 years trading between 700 and 1,000. The bearishness on Wall Street was so thick you could cut it with a knife. In fact, Business Week magazine ran a famous front page cover entitled "Equities Are Dead." Then a young man from Gainesville, Georgia, who no one really heard of or the technical analysis he used to derive his forecast, came out and predicted the Dow was going to 3,600. His name was Robert Prechter Jr., and his work was called the Elliott Wave Theory. The talking heads at the time and much of Wall Street tore him apart. 3,600, they said? How can that be? We can't even get much above 1,000. Well, we ended up more than 10 times that over the next four decades, to the point now where most of the financial advisors and their clients believe the stock market is just a one-way street up. Put the metal to the metal and drive hard and fast. And if there is an accident, the Fed pulls up in their tow truck, throws a bunch of money on the road to soak up whatever blocking it, and get back in your car and drive fast again. Seriously, most of financial advisors weren't even born when I started, or just in diapers, and have yet to experience an honest-to-goodness regular bear market that always come after bull markets. And they do last for a good length of time. Their lack of experience and that of their clients having to face actual two-way traffic, or God forbid, a traffic circle, will surely, in my opinion, cause an enhanced negative reaction and enhance the inevitable bear market that I believe has already begun. I continue to urge you to follow my X page, especially now more than ever, as things literally change in minutes now, no longer days, weeks, and months. Please now have a most blessed second quarter.